Hi, everyone. How are you? Alvaro Vita, Principal Solution Architect at Dell Software.
Jimmy Zhu, Dell Software.
And we're going to be doing some dancing, backflipping, some singing, some karaoke. and then we'll talk about some Active Directory security in a hybrid environment. Right? So we'll go over the agenda a little bit. So we'll talk about the evolution of Active Directory over the years, and where we're at, market trends, Active Directory, and how that integrates with O365 and ramifications of that, technical challenges in securing a hybrid Active Directory environment, and then best practices for not only methodology-wise, but also design considerations. And then at the end, we can do some Q&A if we have chances. So you can save your questions towards the end, please, so that we can go through the content. And we'll also hang around here afterwards if you want to have more detailed conversations. So Jamin is going to start now, and he's going to take you through it.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Having fun in Dai? So hopefully, we can keep the momentum going and get everybody interested and pick up some interesting stuff. So as Errol said, we're going to play the tag team and talk about the Active Directory, and specifically the hybrid Active Directory management, or why it's important and what's the best practice about this. So my portion is more what you call the fluffy stuff, right? The true technical detail. Alvaro is going to walk us through a lot of interesting stuff. So in case you feel dozy after the lunch, now's the time to take a good nap, and I'll wake you up once he starts talking about it. So anyway, all jokes aside, let's go dive right into the Active Directory. So hopefully everybody understands what Active Directory is, what they do. So here's an interesting perspective from the historical perspective, right? Not only about why we use Active Directory today and how we're going to use it, and it's also about what's the purpose of Active Directory and how they evolved. And through the evolution, we can also see the entire infrastructure, the IT process also changed. So just do a quick survey. Who knows what's the original Active Directory is built for? Okay, good, good. What is the Active Directory built for? By servers, and it's more precisely, it's more of a domain management, right? Comes along with the Windows NT world, right? Windows NT client server, make a big cluster, and the basic function is, hey, how do you make sure user logging from one machine versus the other machine, they don't have to type password all the time, right? So just the basic functions. And as you can see, along the way, it changes quite a lot. Right, initially come up, in fact, they previewed it in 1999, almost 20 years history. So along the way, up to today, you heard about Azure AD, right? So everything in the cloud now. Along the way, not only about the kind of chronological changes, but also more and more applications tied into the Active Directory. Not only applications, but also the data management. And eventually today, if you think of this, every single thing related to identity management is pretty much wrapped under the umbrella of Active Directory. In fact, most of the company, they run their IT and human resources with Active Directory. Otherwise, you cannot scale to run a global IT infrastructure, right? So as you can see, this whole migration, it very much coincided with the cloud migration. That is, it is less important about the infrastructure itself, and even less important about where the data resides, where the application resides. Increasingly, it is all about identity management. It's about access control. And it is to that degree that Active Directory becomes probably the most foundational architecture that all of us need to be aware, and all of us need to pay attention. How do we manage this, especially in this cloud era, right? So the second point I want to make is, So who we are, what qualifies us to come here and talk about Active Directory, right? So you probably know a software company named Quest. Have you heard of that? Right? You probably also heard the rumor that Dell Software is becoming Quest as an independent software. And I have to say that I do confirm that the rumor is true. And we're very much excited to be an independent software. If nothing else, we look forward to engaging with all of us much more intimately and bring more innovative product much faster to the market and solve your problem. And this history also illustrates the history of Quest. As you probably know, one of the largest portfolio in Quest, we do practically a lot of software stuff, right? Like endpoint management, performance management, database management, but the biggest portfolio is actually Windows management at that time. We are probably the largest independent software vendor that focus on Windows and the most prestigious and premier partner with Microsoft throughout this journey and maybe even going back way earlier than the 1999 time. So hopefully we'll bring all this back as an independent company. We're going to focus even more on the Windows management and Microsoft platform management. In fact, as we're speaking, we're probably, if we were an independent software company right now, we were probably one of the largest, the biggest consumer of Azure, not only Azure AD, in terms of the instant used and hours used or even the money we pay to Microsoft. So, and this is kind of the scale we bring to the table to support our customers. Speaking of AD, our Windows portfolio, one of the biggest part of the portfolio of Windows is actually Active Directory. We have about more than 100 million user accounts under management using our software. Put into perspective, that's about 20% of the worldwide overall AD users. We're in about 70% of the Fortune 500 companies who use the our software managing their Active Directory. So this is kind of the scale of software in terms of depth, in terms of breadth that we bring to the table as an independent software company. All right. So today we're going to focus on AD. So let's continue the AD journey. And so what's happening in the AD world? And we cannot talk about AD or Azure AD without talking about Office 365. It's probably one of the biggest cloud software being adopted right in Azure, in all fairness. So the numbers are staggering in terms of the adoption rate, in terms of the number of users already there, in terms of the speed, velocity of this kind of adoption. So let me just do a quick survey. How many of you are already using Office 365? Probably majority. How many of you who are thinking about this? All right? Maybe the last question. Who is not going to use Office 365 at all? Let me guess.
You're in the wrong
from
room.
Finance world? From finance, financial, heavily regulated, right? Okay. So this is very much kind of a representing the overall cloud adoption, right? And nothing wrong with that, by the way. It's really that everybody understands the value of the cloud, and probably O365 is probably the most obvious choice for enterprise, large and small, to migrate towards the cloud, right? And probably for a number of reasons. One is really the efficiency. How do you reduce the OpEx, and then why the cloud even happened to begin with, right? It's because virtually every CEO is asking their CIO, why can I get Google economy? Why can I get Facebook economy in terms of scalability, in terms of reliability, in terms of all this flexibility of running their infrastructure in the cloud, right? And obviously the OpEx is a big part of that. Now, not every single instant you can claim the cloud is more cost effective. But largely it is true because you don't have to set aside a CapEx, you don't have to kind of do all this kind of a capital things they usually do as an IT professional to develop the technology or stand up the technology, right? So, but more important, I think it's really the productivity, especially O365, right? So with that, anybody can access your email from anywhere, right, without being kind of constrained by the firewall, all these kind of nice things. And I think it is also about the agility, right? So that's the benefit of O365 and infrastructure side, that the management part is a big burden of on-prem email, right? I used to be in a storage world and still doing a lot of storage work. As I recall, the biggest storage use case, especially in the secondary storage manager side, is the Exchange Server backup recovery, because it is a business critical application, right? And also it becomes more increasingly not only about a productivity issue, it's about a compliance issue. And this is probably why, right, you in your industry is more concerned about, hey, does anybody else have the ability to access my data, right? This is business critical information. If I get audited, can I demonstrate who has actual access to my data, who actually did about this, right? And with cloud, inevitably, it becomes a lot harder. Nonetheless, most people feel comfortable about cloud. And that's why we see kind of, even in this room, most people already migrate to O365, right? So a lot of things along with the cloud, and this is really kind of the crux of the nuts about the Active Directory. Because one of the things that represented by O365 is where the data access occurred doesn't matter anymore. Where the application runs doesn't matter anymore. Where data stores doesn't matter anymore. It can be anywhere, it can be cloud, and even the cloud, you don't even know where physically they're located, right? Everything being taken care of by Microsoft. What is most important, what matters most in this age of the world is the identity, right? This is why, and probably we all know, some of them may not know that, when you use O365, by default, you already use Azure AD. This is how O365 identity is managed, okay? So now coming back to the whole compliance and control stuff. Yes, by default, you're going to use O365. Yes, you're going to migrate a lot of applications towards the cloud. O365 is one of them, along with that, Skype for Business, all this kind of stuff. And along with that, you may have kind of a Azure SQL. SQL Azure, you're going to migrate to many, many applications. Even your homegrown application, you're going to migrate to the cloud. But I can venture out to say that one application, you may think of the last thing you want to migrate to the cloud, which is your Active Directory. Why? This is probably the most critical piece of data, the most critical piece of infrastructure that you want to keep it on-prem. That's where the access is fundamentally controlled. This is where everything that matters, right? So it's great there is an Azure AD, but somehow, even from perception point of view, from psychological point of view, we all think that maybe this part of things we need to protect even further, okay? And not only from protection point of view, but also from practicality point of view, that you do want to make sure there's an on-prem AD, you keep managing all the process, all the infrastructure you put around the on-prem AD can be extended to the cloud, not the other way around, because that will cause a lot of problem. In fact, majority of the enterprise, when they move to the cloud, still keep at least a portion of the AD management, if not all the AD management, on-prem. And then push the data towards the cloud and use Azure AD to manage a lot of cloud identity. And this is why people call it the birthplace of AD, right? So this is really kind of a very illustrating point about the cloud migration. Absolutely, we are going to the cloud. There's no question about that. And that being said, it is also apparent, and it's important for all of us, especially from the enterprise world, that on-prem is not going away. So for that matter, a hybrid cloud management is extremely important for all of us running business in the enterprise world, especially hybrid cloud Active Directory management. So as someone who have done Active Directory many, many years, we as an organization very much recognize that. And all the portfolio we're building today, very much on-prem, and we're aggressively moving to the cloud. And we also recognize there's a huge, huge gap, and the problem needs to be addressed. How do we make this hybrid cloud, especially hybrid Active Directory, work in terms of protection, in terms of management and security, right? So this is really kind of as a illustrating point that yes, cloud is happening, but there is always a critical piece. Every infrastructure, every company will be different, but perhaps Active Directory will be a common denominator that will straddle along both on-prem and in the cloud. How do we manage that, right? So speaking of that, let's talk about this hybrid environment. And this is a simple diagram, hopefully illustrate the overall, what would you call architecture of the hybrid AD going to look like. But there's some very interesting things we can talk about here. First of all, when we move to the cloud, what are the things we need to pay attention to, right? I would submit that first, the whole migration is very, very important. How do you migrate this? Let me see if, why, yeah. Migration of on-prem infrastructure, on-prem data to the cloud is extremely difficult, error-prone, laborious, and oftentimes it doesn't work, right? Because a lot of cloud policies and cloud data format may not match your on-prem stuff. Oftentimes they never do. So the migration and how do you accurately, with fidelity, to migrate your data on-prem infrastructure to the cloud, and also fitting to the cloud policy management domain, that is a very, very difficult thing that we need to worry about and find the best solution to solve that problem. So once we migrate that, or even during the migration, I would submit that the whole management of your cloud infrastructure most likely will be different from your on-prem infrastructure. The policy will be different, the license will be different, just the basic things like that. So you need to worry about how you're gonna change your management infrastructure, management practice, and even management process, right? And then last but not least, how do you really make it secure? And by security, I certainly don't mean kind of a perimeter security, encryption, decryption, kind of firewall stuff. That's a given. In fact, I would submit that cloud security in that regard is much, much better than on-prem security because you just don't have the kind of a bandwidth and power like Microsoft to protect the whole data center, right, perimeter-wise. By security, I mean in this regard, is more about visibility and control. Or another kind of a three-letter word, GRC, right? Governance, compliance, those kind of things becoming more important in the cloud. And most of the company hesitating to go to the cloud is not about the security stuff. It's about, am I going to lose the control? Who is going to access my data, right? Or if some access happened, do I have the visibility to know that this thing happened? If I don't, then I'm going to worry because I have this stringent compliance requirement going on. So in a way, the new IT world is becoming quite interesting, right? We have a huge burden, right? Increase the revenue, reduce the cost, and there is third dimension start evolving and engaging. That is called, how do you help your CXOs stay out of jail? And to that regard, the secure your cloud infrastructure, especially secure your Active Directory infrastructure, is extremely important. And I would submit that the most important part, how do you gain the visibility? Fundamentally, if you look at the Active Directory, what is this? At least from the get-go, right? And eventually evolving to identity management, it's all about who can access what, right? That's the fundamental question that AD help us to answer. And in the cloud, I think there are a couple more things we need to add. Not only who can access what, but also how. in terms of attributes, right? Role-based access control no longer adequate. You have to look at the attributes. And also where, from where that user accesses your data. And because of data sovereignty, a lot of things you do have to worry about. If that person accesses data from Russia versus in US, obviously there'll be different rules that need to be applied. And when, right? And this is where a lot of kind of inside attack occurred. If somebody regularly come to office 9 to 5 and access the file and during that time, all of a sudden this file being accessed by this user 12 o'clock midnight, isn't that something you need to worry about? So all of these things is really about the visibility and the control that can give you extra protection in terms of security to make your infrastructure much, much better, to avoid insider attack or to detect insider attack much, much faster to avoid more problems from occurring. So these are the things that I really want to call out, that when you think about cloud migration, when you think about this, at least these three things you need to pay attention to, right? Do I have the best software that give me the most accurate, most comprehensive migration tools? Do I have the software to manage the cloud infrastructure that has different attributes than your on-prem infrastructure? And how do I manage this comprehensively as a hybrid cloud? And we need to ask ourselves, how do I gain a better visibility and control when I have the most critical data in the cloud, right? And you may say, oh, doesn't Microsoft provide a lot of tools? Absolutely. And that being said, there is also something that we need to think about is Microsoft provide a basic infrastructure, very much a broad, sometimes a very in-depth infrastructure to help us to the cloud. But in terms of a specific business process, in terms of granularity, that is the things that the gap that a lot of room that need to be, a lot of technology need to be developed to fill this kind of gap. Right? For example, Active Directory. Once, of course, you have the backup infrastructure Microsoft provided. But when you really need to recover Active Directory entry, user by user, right? Whether because of malicious attack or whether you accidentally delete a user, how do you recover at the per user level or even per group level? And that is something that's very, very critical in the cloud. Okay? So a lot of interesting things about this hybrid environment, and not the least of which about a cloud environment. So let me see. And we already talked about this. This is really the crux of nuts, that most often, when we leverage the cloud identity, when we use the cloud Active Directory, it's always originated from the on-prem. So to the maximum degree, we can manage, protect on-prem AD well, we can have a lot better control, much smaller surface attack in the cloud. And that's how you can protect your identity. That's how you can ultimately protect your data and application access, all right? So I don't want to go through this much detail. We probably already know the criticality of the on-prem AD versus Azure AD, and combine them together. And this is really that matters a lot, right? A lot of user account at stake. And every user account, if one of them got breached, it's one too many for any enterprise. And this is why it's critical that we need to find a solution to make sure not only your on-prem is protected, your in-cloud assets are protected, and combine them together. How do you protect them holistically and manage them in the very, very seamless fashion? And to talk about this, let me transfer to Aurora, who's going to walk us through with some more interesting solutions. All right?
Thanks, Jimmy. All right. Can everybody see me okay? Is the glare from the light up on my head shining into your eyes? No? It's all good? Put your shades on. All right. So we're going to talk about the hybrid Active Directory security challenges, right? What are some of the challenges? And then I'll tell you, not a product, but what are some of the best practices that you can use to address these challenges that are innate to Active Directory natively, right? So, first thing, who can do what? right? And we'll get back to you in 3 weeks. So here, this thing has clicking issues. All right, this is one of the first questions that your internal or external auditor would ask you, or your security department, security operations, security architectures. Who has access to what, right? And the usual answer, well, I'll get back to you in 3 weeks, right? It's not very easy to go into native on-prem AD and find out who has access to what. By this, I mean who has what permissions to do what. Who has the ability, for example, to back up and recover Active Directory? Why do they become, if I have the ability to back up and recover Active Directory, if I have that permission, a domain admin by default, right? Back up that ntds.did, put it somewhere, take it home, go on the internet, not that you guys will, download some free tools, 5 minutes, I got those hashes, I got those passwords, game over. I own your domain. You're no longer the master of your domain, right? I am, not me, the bad guy or girl. So what you do natively, right, what you do have natively out of the box, come on, clicker. PowerShell, right? You can use PowerShell. You can run a PowerShell commandlets in the Active Directory PowerShell module. Run your permissions, and then you get a CSV output of that, and do some surgery, you know, pruning and grafting, slicing and dicing, and hopefully, like I said, 3 weeks later, you get to that. Now, when those 3 weeks elapse, guess what happened to the environment and the permissions? They've changed, right? None of your environments, see you guys. See you around in the cafeteria. None of those guys, your environment is not going to be static, right? It's going to be dynamic. It's going to be changing. Permissions are going to change. People are going to be onboarded. People are going to change roles. They're going to transfer geographies. They're going to leave the company. Permissions are going to be assigned, and so on and so forth. So the problem with this, right, the challenge, is that it's manual in nature. You need to get and go and download, you know, PowerShell for Dummies if you don't know PowerShell, right? Get familiar with PowerShell, run these commandlets there, and there's no automated way for me to subscribe to these reports. There's no other way to me for, you know, provide an executive dashboard to my security team so that they can get kind of a security baseline or where I have risk in my environment, right? It's just scripting, PowerShell. What's the next challenge? While she thinks about it, we'll keep clicking. Ah, there you go. Who's doing what, right? So what's usually the answer? Well, I don't know for sure. This guy's holding the glass so it doesn't fall over. I don't know for sure. Why? Well, if you are like everybody else on this planet, right? You're looking at the security logs. Let me give you an example. What do we use DPOs for natively? To define en masse configuration and security policies, right? For example, a common known GPO setting that I'm sure a lot of you use, which is a good practice, is deny logon. So if I go in and I say, you know what, I have a payroll server, Windows server, and I don't want my admins to access that server because they have powerful rights to do whatever they want. So if Jaymin is part of that domain admins group or, you know, local administrators group and that, I can have a GPO setting that says, deny logon, right? And he's a domain admin, deny logon. When he tries to log on, sorry, you don't have the rights to log on here. Cool, right? Yeah, not quite. He's a domain admin, right? He can go in into the GPO settings, change that at will, and this is what you'll get, right? Oh, he went into this GPO, and here's the object name, you know, 15BF20F6, whatever that means, right? And then what did he do? Write a property. I don't know exactly what he did. I don't know what setting he did. I don't know the name of the GPO. I didn't know before and after value. Why is that important? First of all, I cannot trace his evidence to the fact that he did this, got in, got out, and nothing got traced, right? Second, If I do find that something was compromised, that I had a data breach because of this, there's no way for me to prevent it from happening again. I don't know what happened. I don't know what he changed. So I cannot fix it, and I cannot remediate it from happening again, because I just don't know. I don't have enough information in the security logs. The other thing I don't have is an alerting capability out of the box. I don't have any way of notifying me of these scenarios, right? These unauthorized actions that are happening in my environment. So, third challenge. Powerful administrators would never access information that they're not supposed to, right? We trust, we love our administrators, but we're humans, right? We get curious. So, according to a Raytheon survey, 69% of surveyed folks, administrators, get curious. Not here in this room, those other guys. And, you know, we just get curious. It's human nature, right? We have access to something, we get curious, we access that information, and she doesn't look worried, so everything's going to be cool. The other challenge is, in addition to administrators having the right to do whatever they want, right, and not having a way for you to mitigate this, is if something were to happen in my environment, right? So let's give the example where, you know, Jamie is an administrator and he grants Jeff access to the payroll security group, right? He has the right to do that. There is nothing that I have other than potentially a detection mechanism to tell me that happened. Now, it's a long weekend, right? I'm out getting trash in Cancun somewhere, or somewhere closer, whatever. And then that happened, right? Unless I'm, you know, 365 days a year, 24/7, looking at something, which of course none of us are doing, unless you're a super geek, then you cannot remediate these things, right? There's no automated way to remediate these things. There's nothing watching out there and saying, these things are sacred, and nobody except a certain amount of authorized people should gain access to this, right? I'm an admin, or I have the right to do something, I'm going to do it, period. The other, you know, challenge is that on the recovery side, right? So let's pretend you get hacked. And then you have this, you know, hacker goes in and malforms attributes in your Active Directory schema. And of course, what happens when you do something in the schema, good or bad? It replicates out, right? Then your whole schema, people can log on, applications cannot authorize people. I mean, your whole environment is down. So what do you got to do? Well, there's this easy 57 pages, 45-step plus document from Microsoft, the best practices, which allows you to go on an orderly basis, right? However orderly you can be when people are yelling at you, and go in and do all of these, you know, scripting and commands. Hopefully you remember the DSRM password to recover the domain controller. Then you have to do it locally, right? You cannot do it from a central location. So you need an army of people. So depending on the number of domains, depending on the number of geographies you have domain controllers, you have to have people there doing that. So let's say you get to step 27, and then everything is going cool. You didn't make any mistakes to that. Then you make a mistake. Guess what happened? You're going to have to restart the whole process again, right? So usually what happens is customers in this scenario would tend to create an alternate forest, right? Because you cannot unplug Active Directory and, you know, just live without it, right? And start building that from scratch. And sometimes, you know, depending on your environment and how complex it is, when you account for things like the creation of the domain controllers, the role assignment, the replication, all of that stuff, it could be days, and sometimes it could be weeks, which of course is impossible to do and still maintain your job, right? You gotta polish that resume out. So this is a big problem, right? And I don't know, how many people in the room have done a forest recovery? Well, this guy has. How long did it take you? 12 hours, right? And while you were doing that, of course, nothing was working, right? Sort of, and you're in a degraded state. So let's talk about some best practices to help you having not only a methodology but functional capabilities so that you mitigate a lot of these challenges within your environment. Usually take me 17 clicks for it to slide. There you go. So this is our methodology, right? So this is not a product. It's just a methodology that we came up with that we've used very large customers across the planet that have not been on the news, right? And there's four easy steps. And as you can see, it's a continuous lifecycle methodology because nothing is static in your environment, right? So assess who can do what, detect and alert what they're doing with that access, remediate unauthorized access that is happening in the environment, mitigate it from happening again, investigate the scope of the security incident that you have, and ultimately recover from that security incident. Four easy steps, right? So on the assessment phase, so here, right, you want to establish a security baseline. Say, who has access to Active Directory permission? Who has access to sensitive service that I may have in my environment? Who has the ability of modifying privileged groups? Not only domain admin groups and those type of groups, but you may also have VIP type of groups like R&D or payroll or finance and so on and so forth. And what systems do I have that may be vulnerable to security threats? What, do I have a security baseline across my GPOs to understand what the NTLM settings are, right? Did somebody weaken that, right? You need to have this baseline. Then you need to detect and alert how and when things deviate from that security baseline that you establish, right? In real time, where is it happening? You know, exactly what changed, before and after value, where it happened, who did it, and so on and so forth. Then once you do that, of course, if there's an actual intrusion, you want to remediate it right away, right? So hopefully you want to have an automated way because you cannot be there all the time. You cannot just throw humans at this, right? You can have an automated way to auto-remediate, a self-healing way that you can go in and automatically say, oh, Jamin got added to the payroll security group, but he's not in payroll. I want to automatically remove him from that. That violates a compliance rule and or a business policy that I may have, right? And then the other thing you want to do is you want to mitigate it from happening again. Do I have to implement a least privileged access model that says you're going to be on a need-to-know basis? You're only going to be able to do what you're supposed to do. Nothing more, nothing less, period. That means reducing the number of administrators that you have with more power than they're supposed to have, right? clicks, there you go. And then, lastly, you want to be able to recover. I don't know what happened to the slide here, but. Lastly, you want to be able to recover, right? You want to make sure that you have an automated way of recovering the environment in the least amount of time, right? So that you can meet your RTO, your recovery time objective. Is it 2 hours, is it 3 hours, is it 4 hours? I want to be able to test that on a continuous basis, quarterly, annually, whatever it is in your organization. And I want to be able to measure that, right, and document that. So if Jamie is the only person in the organization that can do that, I should be able to cross train so that other people in the organization can also do that. I got to be able to do it from any geography. I want to be able to do it remotely, and so on and so forth. And, of course, I want it to be as human prone as possible. So I don't want a lot of errors happening. So let's have an example of what this would look like in the event of remediation and mitigation capabilities. So here we have a domain admin, and again, I have a sensitive resource, payroll, finance, you know, R&D, SOX documents, PCI, HIPAA, PI, you name it, right? And I said, well, how can I prevent an all-powerful administrator that can do whatever he or she wants from accessing data that they're not supposed to, and or applications and resources that are controlled by security groups, right? What is the answer natively? Sorry, dude, you can't, right? You can't do that. There's nothing that you can do it, right? So one of the functional capabilities that you should have within your toolbox is the ability of having application permission whitelisting and blacklisting in Active Directory. So what is that? Well, regardless of the permissions, I want to have an ability to define a set of authorized users that can change or modify certain sensitive objects within my organization. So I can say, oh, okay, here I have the payroll security group, domain admins, backup operators, local administrators, whomever you want. Nobody can access that, only the VP of finance, the payroll clerk, and so on and so forth. So what happens is that when Amin, who's an administrator, can do whatever he wants, goes and tries to modify the security group, boom, it won't make this noise, it will just happen. You have insufficient permissions to perform these operations. It'll prevent it, because it'll look at the list and say, hey, wait a second, you're not in the authorized list. You can have all the rights you want. I don't care. You're not going to be able to modify these security groups. And in real time, somebody will get notified right away and say, hey, listen, Jamin, who's a domain admin, try to access that particular payroll security group, even though he shouldn't be able to do that, right? So the two important things to take away from this, and out of all this presentation, is it comes down to you cannot be watching everything all the time. So having this kind of capability to prevent something from happening that shouldn't happen, right, unauthorized access to resources, whether it's from inside people or outside people, I could be using a PowerShell script, I can be using, you know, a hacking tool, it doesn't matter. This will prevent it, right, and notify the appropriate people, whether you're there or not. Ultimately, it comes down to that. I can stop it, and I can audit it right away. We talked about investigate and recover, right? So you need to be able to investigate the scope of the incident, what LOBs got affected, what geographies, how many people, how many servers, right? And then right away, be able to remediate that as fast as possible with the least amount of effort, and bring your environment as fast as possible. So we talk about the practices, right? This is a methodology that you need to have, regardless of the enabling software that you have to help you achieve that, right? Let's talk about the design criteria. What, aside from your physical security layers, from your data security layers that you need to implement, you also need to have logical and administrative security layers that will allow you to have the governance controls to protect your Active Directory environment, right? And as Yamin said, 75% of companies with more than 500 employees are usually syncing from on-prem to the cloud. So if I govern what's on-prem, as that data flows to the cloud, right, everything will be cool. But if he's not governed, if I'm able to add Jamin to that payroll security group, and that in turn grants him access to not only on-prem resources, but also OneDrive folders that I may have for payroll, SharePoint online resources that I may have, there is nothing that Azure AD will do to prevent that. This is the authoritative source. It's coming up. I'm assuming everything is cool, right? So that's why it's important to protect that. So let's look at this, and let's break it down. So this is what we've implemented at a lot of large organizations that have this gaps and challenges, if you will, in Active Directory, right? So at the top, you have your data sources. You know, this could be an HR system, it could be an IDM system, it could be people manually entering, onboarding people, right? So that person enters the organization, and then what happens? So the first thing you want to do, we already talked about this, is two things, right, that are gaps that you want to mitigate. First, I want to establish Active Directory and GPO permission whitelisting. Why? It doesn't matter what I do in Active Directory. If I have a GPO that doesn't correspond to that, right, and it's not protected in turn, and I have conflict of interest, in other words, domain admin can do whatever he wants, and I have a GPO to prevent it, it's useless. He can do whatever he wants. And as you saw from my previous screen, it won't get audited, and it won't get prevented either, right? So you want to make sure, the first thing you want to do is establish a baseline. Where are my top GPO objects, mission-critical GPO objects that grant access to sensitive resources? So things like my default domain GPO, my default domain controller's GPO, and other, you guys know your environment better than me, right? What are the other GPOs that I want to protect and say, you know what, here's the authorized list of people, regardless of the permission that can make changes to this GPO first. Same thing for Active Directory, right? There's going to be things in Active Directory, right? Security groups, computer objects, OUs, other object classes that you want to prevent people, even admins, from accessing. So I don't want my admin to be able to reset, let's say, the password for my CFO. Or I don't want my admin to be able to modify a particular security group that is outside of the realm of what he's supposed to do, even though he can do it, because he shouldn't do that. It'll break a compliance regulation that I have, right? Once I do that, I also want to do this around attributes. So Jamie talked about attribute-based asset controls. At the end of the day, right, whatever workflows and policies and process orchestration you have will be meaningless if your underlying data, the fidelity of that data, is inaccurate, right? So for example, let's say I have an approval workflow in an IDM system or whatever system you may have, where it says, oh, okay, if he tries to access a particular security group, his manager should approve it, and or the owner of that group should approve it. Well, what if the manager field is empty? What if the particular owner of that group is empty, right, or incorrect? Then it won't work. Also, if you're using attributes, hopefully, to define who has access to what. So let's say I have an attribute that says, oh, okay, department equals finance, location equals Germany, and employee type equals full-time. Based on that, then I can create dynamic groups. So dynamic groups are groups that allow me to, based on those attributes, and as they change, people will get access to, will get automatically added to those groups. I don't have to touch them. It's self-healing and self-correcting. The moment that person moves to the marketing department, boom, it'll remove it from there and add it to the marketing department as those attributes change, right? So this is where we are in this type of design. So we moved away from role-based access control because it's very complex and it's very constrained to attribute-based access controls, where you want to define attributes, and as those change dynamically, the access somebody has changes as well. But, of course, as you can see here, I have to first protect those attributes from being modified from somebody. So I don't want somebody to go in and modify my finance group so that they can add it to a group dynamically. So I protect that with permission whitelisting. The other thing you want to do is you want to add ad hoc groups, because dynamic groups doesn't cover anything, everything. So here I have Austin, who's coming in on the weekend on my change management window and says between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m., she's going to be have to put in a patch on a server. Oh, well, that requires her to have admin rights on that box. But that server contains, you know, a database that has PII-type data, right? And I don't want to touch that or have permanent access to that because I'll forget. So I can use these temporary groups, and I can define and say, oh, okay, come Saturday morning at 10 a.m., she will be added to this particular group. At the end of that period, she will be removed. And then I can have approval workflows, as you can see here, where somebody, even though it's temporary, somebody has to approve it before that happens in the future, and somebody will protect it. And ideally, I would like to also audit during that time period, right, what exactly did she do on that box. And what you're doing also by using these temporary groups is you're narrowing the window of opportunity for an intruder or an attacker or somebody who, you know, is inside a company to do damage. You're limiting the scope of that. So that's for groups. What about privileged accounts, right? So service accounts, generic accounts, you know, powerful accounts that you have in the environment. You need to have within that particular layer an ability to deal with those accounts separately, right? You don't want humans resetting the passwords to these all-powerful accounts that give access to these applications, right? You want to have some kind of PIM system or password information management or PAM system, password vaulting, that goes in and manages that, recycles that password, you know, let's say every 30 days, every 90 days. It's more than 25 characters. It's got all this complexity, right? But it does it on its own. If there's a service associated with it, it recycles that service and manages. There's no human interaction. There's no, like, 50 people that know the passwords to these accounts, right? That's a big problem. That's a lot of surface attack area. Then you want to be able to have a least privileged access model on AD and on GPOs. So what do you think the privilege delegation is? If I need to give Jamie the ability to move objects from the marketing department to the finance department, I need to be able to give him the right to delete any objects from that OU and write to the target OU. Say, wait a second, all I wanted was a move. But that's how constrained that delegation model is, right? I don't have a least privileged access model. What we can do, when we say a move is a move. You're going to be able to move people from here and to here. Nothing more, nothing less. So you want to be able to enforce that and implement that. Then you want to be able to have segregated views. So if I have Active Directory and I have, let's say, three domains or three forests, right? And one of those forests deal with the federal government that have different regulations. And you want to separate that out so that somebody within that forest can only see a particular OU to, let's say, reset passwords for temporary workers in the company. Will you be able to constrain the ability for that person to just see that OU? You can't do that, right? Once in Active Directory, you can read and view whatever you want. So there's no way for you to have segregation of duties, segregation of views, either by administrative boundary, by line of business, by geography. Same thing if you're in Europe. You have in-country regulations. You have specific country laws. Let's say you're in Germany. You say, oh, okay, well, I only want the German-based administrator to reset passwords in a loan account for the German set of users. And these users may be across, let's say, 40 OUs. What do you got to do natively? Got to go 40 times and delegate each time to each of those things. So ideally, you would want to have a way to have an abstraction layer that removes all of these 40 OUs and presents a single view that I can then delegate to these people. When they connect, that's all they're going to do. It's a security trim view of that. It reduces my delegation effort, but it also allows me to comply with that regulation, right? Then from there, you want to then have, of course, if all of these functional applications are doing all of these things for me, I want to protect those applications, right? So you want to do things like, now that I'm protecting my GPOs, I can have certainty of using things like denied logon, denied act as part of the operating system, denied logon bash, and so on and so forth, right? And then you want to be able to restrain who can access these security control applications that are governing your environment, right? So I want to have a jump box where you can only have secure RDP to that box, and certain people can only do that, and then record a session. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who you are. It's not a matter if when you're going to get breached, you're going to get breached. It's just a matter of time, right? So what recovery capabilities do I have, contingency planning do I have to actually recover when that happens? How fast can I do it? What is the process that I do it? Do I test this process? Is this documented if I leave? Can somebody do it? Do I have the right people cross-trained? And ultimately, as you can see here, the whole process, the whole multi-layer process, right, from cradle to grave, has to be auditable, right? I need to be able to have forensic analysis from cradle to grave and anything that happens in the middle, right? And as you can see here, this multi-layer approach is not preventing people from doing what they need to do, right? They're going to do what they need to do, but on a need-to-know basis, on a governmental basis. And ultimately, they're going to gain access to the O365 resources. Okay? I'm running out of time here. And this is what, ideally, your end state should look like, right? So in the middle, you have your hybrid Active Directory environment, right? You have your on-prem environment. You have Azure AD Connect or Deer Sync, whatever you're using to sync that up to Azure AD and O365. And you have this security umbrella guarding that, a continuous lifecycle methodology that allows you to do the things that we talked about, right? Assess, detect, remediate and mitigate, and ultimately recover. So to summarize, right, AD is the authoritative source of authentication and authorization for, in this type of a setup, when you're syncing up to O365 in Azure AD. One, right? Two, if your AD is not secure, your cloud environment is not going to be secure. So make sure that you have a security methodology and the enabling functionality, the two things, right? The technical tools and the methodology married together that allows you to ensure that your on-prem Active Directory environment does not become your Achilles heel to your Azure AD and O365 applications in the cloud. That's it. Thank you. I'll stick around. If you have any questions, you can ask me now. You can ask us now, or I'll stick around here as well. You can get more information. This particular information, get free white papers, best practices. There's a lot of white papers that goes into a lot of details and checklists that you got to go through to achieve these type of scenarios. Thank you very much.